Good day, and welcome to the SNC-Lavalin second quarter 2018 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin. Please go ahead, sir.
Merci, Sebastian. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. With me today are Neil Bruce, President and CEO, and Sylvain Girard, Executive Vice President and CFO. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on the investors section of our website. If you are not using today's webcast, please ensure to open the presentation as we will refer to it during this call. The recording of today's call and webcast will also be available on our website within 24 hours. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to draw your attention to slide two of the presentation. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risk and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectation as of today and accordingly are subject to change. We disclaim any obligation to update any forward-looking statements except as required by law. A description of the risk factors that may affect future results is contained in the company's MD&A, available on our website and in our filings with the Canadian Securities Administrators. During today's call, we will also discuss certain non-IFRS financial numbers. You can find reconciliation of these numbers with comparable IFRS measures in the presentation and in our MD&A. With that, I will turn the conference over to Neil Bruce. Neil?
Thank you, Denis, and good afternoon, everyone. I will briefly review our Q2 results and discuss the sector's highlights and trends. Sylvain will then cover the Q2 financial aspects in more detail. Let me start by saying that I'm very proud that we were recently ranked as the third leading international design firm by ENR. This recognition demonstrates our continued de-risking and repositioning in the business and strengthens our company's position as one of the top companies in the world for both small and large-scale design projects. This result reflects the broad strength and dedicated efforts of our teams around the world. We're also very pleased with the results for the first six months of 2018, which are in line with our expectations and reached a milestone of over 15 billion dollars of backlog. As announced in today's press release, we have also launched a process to potentially sell 6.76% of our investment in Highway 407, and we've engaged CIBC and RBC as our financial advisors. The reason for the 6.76% is that we wish to retain 10% and our position as a strategic investor. We believe that the value realized through this potential transaction will demonstrate and augment the valuation of our capital investments and will concurrently help the market to value SNC-Lavalin's E&C business more accurately, as alluded to in Q1. To be clear, we believe that the 407 is currently undervalued. We believe that its value is in excess of the current analyst consensus. This is the only way to truly demonstrate the value. As you can see from slide four, we've had two non-operational items this quarter. First, we recorded a net expense of $88 million as we settled the legacy class action lawsuits brought back in 2012. So this is now behind us. And note that the new DPA legislation called the Remediation Agreement Regime in Canada crossed an important step in Q2, receiving royal assent on June the 21st. And coming into force 90 days later towards the end of September. The second non-operational item, which we're very pleased with, is a gain of $63 million on the successful transfer of our investment in the McGill Hospital to the SNC-Lavalin Infrastructure Partnership. Our revenues were up 31% to $2.5 billion, and our adjusted diluted EPS from E&C was 65 cents. Which represents a 51% increase compared to Q2 2017. We also delivered an EBITDA margin from E&C of 7.7%, which was 0.2% up on Q1 and higher than the 4.6% in Q2 2017. Our new awards were strong in the second quarter, mainly from infrastructure, which included the REM project awards, as well as from EDPM, which included many new reimbursable service contracts. The results for our first 6 months and our backlog level gave us confidence to maintain our 2018 outlook for an adjusted diluted EPS from E&C in the range of $2.60 to $2.85, which in turn is on track to deliver our 2020 vision. Let's now look at our sector starting at slide 5. Our mining and metallurgy sector strategy of diversification into studies, sustaining capital services and major projects, as well as its use of innovation and technology on its business offerings, reinforced the path to growth. There are increased numbers of emerging business opportunities in this market. As we started Q3, we have received a detailed engineering mandate and study mandates from two Tier 1 mining clients. We also expect to secure a major project during Q3. Despite delays in some contract awards, we remain optimistic as our clients restart significant investments in their capital expenditures for the end of 2018 or early 2019. We see a wide variety of attractive prospects and opportunities in copper, gold, fertilizer, and commodities related to batteries for electric vehicles, mobile phones, and other electronic devices. We're currently working on bids or awaiting responses on a significant portfolio of projects, particularly in the Middle East, North Africa, Latin America, and Australia. Considering the current increase in market demand and the promising pipeline, this sector seems poised for continued growth into the future. Our oil and gas sector signed a multiple services agreement during the quarter, which we expect to yield revenues in future quarters. This year, a larger number of our awards were long-term frameworks and master services agreement, which creates sustainable revenues with clients in addition to project contracting and our midstream book and burn businesses. Bidding activities in Q2 continued at a very robust rate and were in a single source negotiation on several significant contracts. We are continuing to see positive market sentiment due to good fundamentals across the market for upstream, midstream, and downstream opportunities. The addition of Atkins' complementary design and consultancy capabilities last year to create our enhanced engineering and consulting services is driving customer interest and contract awards. Customers are looking for efficiency, innovation, and collaboration to improve economics, and we're well positioned to deliver. This includes the offshore market through our field development, offshore wind, asset integrity expertise, and digital solutions. Our diversified portfolio has allowed us to sustain a strong business as the market evolves through this cycle. We're very pleased with the performance of our nuclear business. Revenues were up 83% compared to Q2 2017, and EBIT margin was up to 17% in Q2. We were awarded some projects in the quarter, such as the fuel channel and feeder replacement contract from Bruce Power. Our order book reflects work on the first reactor. There is potentially five more in addition to go. We were also recently formed with Holtec, a US-based 40-60 GB called CDI, to pursue nuclear reactor decommissioning work in the US. And we're very pleased that this JV was awarded this week some significant contracts to decommission U.S. nuclear plants. The unique contribution of our respective companies bring a complete solution to reactor decontamination and decommissioning, bringing technology and innovation to fuel management and facilities dismantlement. With an aging nuclear power plant fleet and the rise of lower costs, means of energy generation in the U.S., decommissioning has become a rapid growth market with a forecast value exceeding $14 billion U.S. dollars over the next 10 years. Note that about a third of our year-to-date nuclear revenues relates to decontamination, decommissioning, and waste management projects. Our last ongoing thermal power project continues to be a challenge, but we're glad to report that the plant is now in commercial operations and the client is selling power. We are continuing to grow our clean energy portfolio in renewable energy, hydro, and T&D, and we are pleased with the recent contract award from the design and delivery of three substations in the UAE. We expect these markets to grow significantly into the future. Turning to slide six, the infrastructure sector had another good quarter, with $500 million in revenues and $26 million EBIT. New awards were very strong in the quarter, with a book-to-bill ratio of 4-1, bringing this ratio to 2.5 for the year. And our backlog ended the quarter at $9 billion. Our ongoing major projects continue to progress well. The Eglinton project in Toronto is advancing well, and the Confederation Line project in Ottawa is on track to open later this year. The Champlain project faced some challenges in the quarter due to recent law changes. We are currently discussing this with our client. The company remains committed to completing this project as soon as practically possible. As for the REM project, it is in an early phase, but it is starting well, and we're currently working mainly on advanced works such as design, demolition, and site investigations. We continue to be bullish on the infrastructure sector as it continues to be very active. Our bidding activities continue to be strong, and we have a lengthy list of projects, especially here in North America. Our EDBM sector continues to show strong results, delivered in Q2, a 12% EBIT margin. EDPM has booked $1 billion in new contracts, which include a master planning agreement for a new economic city in Amman, a contract to design the first crossing on London's Thames River in 20 years, from Rotherhithe to Canary Wharf, and reselection as engineering consultant for a seventh consecutive term by Florida's Turnpike Enterprise. This is a five-year work program covering Florida's user finance transport system. EDPM revenue backlog totaled $2.4 billion at the end of Q2. We continue to deliver the cost synergies anticipated, and we are seeing new revenue opportunities. We recently announced an award from BP for services for the now integrated SNC-Lavalin and Atkins businesses, and we have a great program running to embed across our whole company a number of technology platforms and solutions with which EDPM in particular has had success already with clients. And lastly, our capital sector had a strong quarter with a $63 million gain on the disposal, as mentioned earlier, and strong results from Highway 407, which reported in Q2 increases of 10% in revenues, 2% in traffic, and 9% in dividends. In summary, we're pleased with our performance so far this year, as it is in line with our expectations. We are entering Q3 2018 with over $15 billion of backlog, a number of recently signed master services agreements, and a high-quality list of prospects across our key sectors and geographies. This positions us well for a strong second half of 2018. And with that, I'll pass the call over to Sylvain to go over our financial results in more detail.
Thank you, Neil, and good afternoon, everyone. I'll start on slide 8. Before I get into the financial details, let me remind you that we made some of the changes to our segment disclosure on January 1st of this year. For your information and ease of comparison, we have included again this quarter on slides 15 and 16 in the appendix the comparative 2017 restated quarterly numbers for the new segment disclosure. That being said, let's look at the financials for this quarter. Let me start by commenting on the two non-operational items that Neil just mentioned. Firstly, we recorded an $88 million pre-tax or $65 million after-tax charge for the 2012 class action lawsuit settlement, which the agreement was announced on May 22nd. Note that the related cash disbursement is expected in late Q3 or early Q4. Secondly, we have recorded a gain on disposal of $63 million pre-tax or $58 million after-tax relating to the successful transfer or investment in the McGill Hospital to the SNC-Lavalin Infrastructure Partnership, of which we own 20%. The relating proceeds of $92 million were received in Q2. Now moving to the operational metrics. Total revenues for Q2 2018 increased by 30.6% and totaled $2.5 billion. This growth was due to the revenue increase from EDPM and nuclear, largely attributable to the incremental revenues from Atkins, which was acquired in Q3 2017. This was partially offset by a decrease in oil and gas, mainly due to the near completion of major projects and thermal power as we are closing down the activity. It is also important to note that due to our Atkins acquisition and the master service agreements that we have been awarded, our revenue mix is significantly changing. Our 6 months year-to-date revenues were composed of 75% of reimbursable and engineering services contracts and 25% of EPC fixed price contracts, compared to a mix of 68-32 for the corresponding period in 2017. Total segment EBIT totaled $221 million, an increase of 43% compared to Q2 2017. The nuclear segment had a strong second quarter with 17% segment EBIT margin, as well as the EDPM segment, delivering a $94 million segment EBIT. On the other hand, the thermal power segment recorded another negative segment EBIT of $11 million in Q2 2018, mainly due to an unfavorable cost reforecast on the company's last ongoing fixed-price EPC thermal power plant project. As we mentioned before, we're exiting this part of the business and have adjusted our structure to focus on growth and higher margin areas of the power market. This thermal power plant is now in commercial operations, and we have now significantly demobilized. Our adjusted EBITDA from ENC amounted to $190 million in Q2 2018, with a margin of 7.7%, significantly higher than Q2 2017. Our financial expenses increased mainly due to the financing of the acquisition of Atkins in Q3 2017. Note that we continue to refinance some of our debt in 2018, which is reducing our financing costs. I will shortly get into the liquidity and debt ratios in more details. Adjusted net income from ENC amounted to $114 million, or 65 cents per diluted share in Q2 2018. The increase was mainly due to a higher segment EBIT, partially offset by an increase in financial expenses and income taxes. Backlog reached $15.2 billion at the end of June 30, 2018, with $4.1 billion bookings in the quarter, mainly from infrastructure and EDPM. Our book-to-bill ratio is now 1.3 for the year. Note that our backlog at the end of the quarter was composed of 72% of reimbursable and engineering service contracts versus 28% EPC fixed price contracts. Now moving to slide 9. We see that oil and gas had a lower segment EBIT in the quarter compared to Q2 2017, driven by lower revenues. For the year, we expect that the segment will deliver an EBIT margin in line with our historical levels between 6.5 and 7.5%. As we rebuild the backlog with new awards, such as the recently announced contracts in Kuwait, Oman, and UAE. Nuclear segment EBIT was higher than Q2 2017, mainly due to the Atkins incremental revenues, coupled with a strong profitability. Clean power had lower activities this quarter, mainly due to the near completion of certain projects, coupled with a lower EBIT margin, as Q2 2017 included a favorable outcome from a major project. We expect that the segment EBIT for clean power to be around 6% for the year. As just mentioned, the thermal power segment recorded an unfavorable cost reforecast on the company's last ongoing fixed-price EPC thermal power plant project. The infrastructure segment had a good quarter, and we continue to expect the segment EBIT margin to be between 4 and 6% for the year. The EDPM segment delivered another strong quarter with an 11.7% segment EBIT margin. Turning to slide 10. Our operations used $60 million of cash in Q2 2018, which was less than in Q1 2018 and Q2 of last year. Year to date, our operations used $207 million compared to $269 million for the corresponding period. The improvement was mainly driven by a higher EBIT from ENC and a decrease in restructuring costs paid, partially offset by an increase in interest paid and higher working capital requirements on projects, more specifically caused by the closeout of thermal power and timing of milestones and settlement in a few oil and gas projects in the Middle East. Other than the cash flows from operations, We see on the right-hand side that a large amount of cash movements was relating to the debt as we are proactively managing our credit facility. So far this year, we issued unsecured debentures of $525 million and used the proceeds to repay in full tranches 2 and 3 of our term facility for approximately $397 million and to repay certain indebtedness outstanding under our revolving facility. We issued new unsecured debentures of $150 million and used the proceeds to repay certain outstanding debt. We also amended and restated our credit agreement for the purpose of making available a new five-year non-revolving term loan of $500 million, for which the proceeds have been used to repay tranche B of our CDPQ loan. These debt issuances were achieved at lower interest rates than the debt we have repaid, and therefore will reduce our future overall financing costs. Moving to slide 11. As of June 30, 2018, the company continues to maintain appropriate liquidity to pursue its growth strategy. We closed the quarter with $721 million in cash and cash equivalents, $1.5 billion in net recourse debt, and $2.1 billion in unused capacity under our $2.6 billion committed revolving credit facility. The net recourse debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio was 1.6. Lastly, concerning today's announcement regarding a potential sale of a portion of our 407 stake, let me give you our current thoughts on the use of proceeds. First, there are three items that will need to be covered if a transaction takes place. Those are the repayment obligations under the CDPQ loan agreement, the execution of our deleveraging plans as defined at the time of the Atkins acquisition, and funding potential settlements for which we have no indication of being worse than expectations. Then, regarding the remainder of the proceeds, we will be evaluating which capital allocation strategy, such as share buyback and M&A, would be the most attractive to shareholder value. These choices will be heavily dependent on where our share price is at the time of a transaction and if we feel that we are still undervalued. In terms of timing, we're still in the early phase of the sale process and expect a closing in the fourth quarter. Now, turning to my last slide, slide 12, we're maintaining our 2018 outlook for an adjusted diluted EPS from ENC in the range of $2.60 to $2.85 and our adjusted consolidated diluted EPS of $3.60 to $3.85. As a result of project activity level and award timing, we expect a stronger adjusted diluted EPS from ENC in the second half of 2018 than in the first half. We also expect that the adjusted diluted EPS from ENC in Q4 will be stronger than Q3, which should be similar to Q2. This concludes my presentation. We can now open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We now take our first question from Mona Nazir from Laurentian Bank.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions.
Hi, Mona.
Hi, how are you? So I just wanted to touch on the thermal core. I'm just wondering, given your comments regarding the final project ramping down, do you expect some remnant flow through into Q3 or Q4, or has it concluded?
Well, the project itself has, it's come into commercial operations. The client is selling power, so that's a good place to be. We've still got a few final commissioning items that we need to complete. But I think to give you a sense, we are, that was in July, and ultimately the team size that we've got on site is now 1/10 of what it was previously. So, I mean, if there's anything there, it'll be pretty small. It'll be pretty small.
Okay, thank you. And just looking at the quarter, given Atkins a little bit hard to break out the organic growth, and especially with the strong sequential backlog improvement. I'm just wondering, were you in positive organic growth territory in the quarter?
Well, I think you can, I mean, you could get a sense of, I mean, most of the EDPM is quite intact, so that's, EDPM itself had a good quarter. Then when you look at nuclear, we did have some growth in that space as well. And those were the main changes of how Atkins got broken out. I mean, the small piece that went to oil and gas, but overall oil and gas did not have organic growth, as you can tell, so...
Okay, so net-net, it might have been a slight positive on organic growth, or do you think it was neutral?
Well, it wouldn't be, net-net. I think oil and gas would have offsetted that if you exclude all of Atkins. But it is hard to break down as well at this stage. Yeah.
I think the important thing for us sort of setting ourselves up for the remainder of this year is, you know, the book-to-bill ratios are actually really good and continuing to improve across all of the ongoing sectors. So, and I think it's a little bit of I think I referred to it in Q1. I mean, you know, we now feel like in terms of all of the sectors apart from the thermal sector that we're seeing positive business development growth. And pipeline, and we are continuing to convert a number of these, but we actually see a really positive pipeline, probably the best we've seen in the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, just to precise, Mona, I think, you know, in mining we are seeing organic growth, but the thermal is clearly as it's declining. So the core. Or the legacy SNC, if you want to call it that way, is declining because of that and because of oil and gas. So,
okay, and just lastly for me, I really appreciate your discussion on what you're hoping to establish from the potential divestment of the 407 or a portion of it. I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit about timing, because at last year's Analyst Day, you were highlighting the potential value appreciation to 6 to 7 by 2026. So I thought perhaps you have maybe looked to divest further out. Was there any like pull factor for the asset or expressed interest from any parties, or did it have anything to do with the timing of the DPA and that you know, monetary settlement?
Yeah, I mean, it's got nothing to do with the DPA. I mean, we don't need to sell any assets in order to be able to cover that. I mean, our financing and our capital structure can deal with all of that. So these two things are not linked. In terms of timing, as Sylvain said, it's going to be sort of Q4. The real thing is, if you sort of remember back to Q1, I mean, one of the things that we did talk about, and it was more in the Q&A rather than in the presentation itself, is that, you know, we felt like as we continue to work through things which were being described, I guess, by the market as overhangs on the stock, we certainly felt there was really two things to go. There was one, which was the ENC business and the settlement of the federal charges. And I think there is potentially a path forward to settlement on that, but that's clearly something that we're not in control of. We need to be invited into that process, but, you know, we're more optimistic now that legislation's in place. But also the second thing was really about the, you know, what is the valuation of, true valuation of the 407? You know, and we talked about a number of ways of trying to find a way to really demonstrate what the value was. And we clearly think that the 407, if you take it in terms of, you know, analyst consensus, we think the 407 is undervalued as well. So we're looking at a way of remaining a strategic partner, hence keeping the 10%, but also finding a way of demonstrating the true value of the 407. So that would be another way I think, of taking the second piece out of the way. And then after that, the market values SNC-Lavalin based on what it thinks it's worth.
That was very helpful. Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll take our next question from Frederic Bastien from Raymond James. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. We saw lots of contract awards in the Middle East for your oil and gas division, but it was fairly quiet elsewhere. I was wondering if there are any opportunities that you're excited about elsewhere in the world, and if you could share that with us.
Yeah, I think, so you're right, there was a number of contract awards, and in fact, you know, there's a number certainly that we signed to, we're looking to announce through August as well. A lot of them being master services contracts, book and burn contracts, which don't really translate into the traditional long-term order book under the new IFRS 15 guidelines in terms of what you put into a backlog, but it's good sustainable work and long-term work. I think we had some good contract wins in infrastructure, and we certainly did again on more of a consultancy, as we said, within EDPM, and actually the most positive sector, certainly within the last month, has been the nuclear sector, and particularly in the US and the decommissioning program, and the work that ultimately we have access to and we will be performing with the Holtec JV that I referred to. That's been a huge, huge pickup just in the last couple of months, and the potential there is very, very strong.
Great. Well, that actually dovetailed nicely into my second question about those contract awards in the nuclear. You know, very multi-year contracts, big dollar values, but the press releases weren't very clear as to, you know, the timing of it all and what sort of revenues you could anticipate from these contracts. You did mention, however, that about a third of your revenues year-to-date were coming from those kinds of activities. Do these contracts sort of double that business or potentially grow the business even more?
Yeah, so the third so far clearly is work that we're doing in other areas, and this is all in addition to that. You're right as well. I mean, they are long-term contracts, typically, you know, sort of circa 10-year type contracts. We are doing them from a risk perspective and from a management and capability perspective. We're doing them in joint venture with Holtec in the US. And the JV that we formed for that is a 40, SNC-Lavalin 40%, Holtec 60%. And as we begin to mobilize and start with these contracts, again, we'll give a bit more clarity, I think, around the longevity and also how we account for them, because we're still looking at whether it's equity accounted or not. So we will give more clarity around all of that so that you can actually see what the activity levels are for the remainder of this year and into 2019.
Okay, thanks. My last question, just going back to the 407, you did address the use of potential use of the proceeds. My question refers to more like a buying interest, and I know it's been kicked around a couple of times already. What makes you confident that it's a complex shareholder agreement? But what makes you confident that this can be a portion of it can be sold this time around?
Well, I mean, it is a great asset that has such a long time to go still. I think the performance of the asset, as you can see, has just been phenomenal. And I think if you look at, you know, the market has started over the last 3-4 years to really appreciate that it was undervalued, and you see that when you look at the evolution of the in our stock price, the valuation by the analysts of our stock price. So I think there'll be quite a bit of interest to get into that in the marketplace and take a stake in it. So I really think it's a great asset. That's the feedback we get all the time, and I think others will want to participate.
Yeah, no, I wasn't debating the quality or the great business that 407 is. It's more like the timing, and I know it is a fairly complex project, a shareholder agreement, so that those were more where I was going to.
Yeah, I mean, just on that, I mean, prior to launching the program, I mean, we had detailed discussions with our partners within that, so that gave us added confidence in terms of support and ultimately about this process being successful in all aspects of it. So from that perspective, we haven't launched this program without consultation with our partners. We've had full consultation with our partners on this.
Thank you.
We now take our next question from Jacob Bu from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Along
the lines of the proceeds from the 407, from an M&A perspective, what would interest you? You know, what areas would you be thinking about right now?
Yeah, so on M&A, our what we've said previously hasn't changed at all. So we won't be doing any M&A this year. We probably won't be doing any for the vast majority of 19, so it may kick in back in 20. Presuming that we can take away these overhangs, and you know, if we get a re-rating, then the whole capital allocation strategy might support M&A further down the line. If we don't get that, then in terms of the allocation strategy, you know, may be more accretive to actually do, potentially share buybacks with, you know, any surplus that we have. So that piece of it, I think, is quite fluid at this stage. I mean, we are looking at this very much in terms of working our way down the list, as Sylvain had said, which is the CDPQ loan is the first thing, the deleveraging is the second. If we are in a position to be invited in and we can reach a settlement under the DPA agreement, then clearly that's another one. I mean, we've settled up as well with on the class actions for the two provinces, supporting the dividend strategy. And then after that, I think, you know, come the end of the year and moving into 19, then if there was additional funds there, together with whatever we're generating from the operations, then we would look at the capital allocation strategy then based on our valuation and, whatever was most accretive.
Has there been any communication with the government at all as far as working towards a settlement?
We've approached the government around timings. They've been very clear that there's the 90-day period after royal assent, and then after that they will consider whether they will invite us in for discussions or not. So very much by the book, and we're in their hands on that particular item.
Okay. Your last question here, just around some of the decommissioning work that you're doing. Can you talk a little bit about how the relationship between S&C Legacy and the W.S. Atkins Nuclear is progressing, you know, what doors that has opened up for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's so if we look at it in terms of you know, we so you look at the acquisition of Atkins, you look at the cost synergies we have, and we're on track to deliver all of that. But really, the important pieces are revenue synergies and two main areas in terms of you know, where we think we are really going to generate significant revenue synergies. One was the rail and transit side of the business, but really the biggest one is in the nuclear arena. So if you look at our nuclear capabilities now, so we brought the nuclear group together under Sandy Taylor, and we really have capabilities that flow from new build design, architect, engineer, owner, engineer, consultancy, which has come principally from Atkins UK capabilities, although they operate more than in the UK, more than just the UK, but that's principally the origins of it. We've then got the reactor upgrade, life extension capabilities. Again, that is specifically around CANDU in terms of the work that we're performing at the moment, but we do have the capabilities to do it with other technology. But, you know, so there's a long program there in terms of OPG, the first reactor that we're working on at the moment, and potentially three more, together with Bruce Power in terms of the first one, and then there's five in addition to that. We're also around the looking after the waste management. We were, I believe it was a 22% partner in Chalk River as SNC-Lavalin. Atkins were a 25% partner. So, I mean, effectively, we are now really the management interest there of 50% within that facility, obviously here in Ontario. And then the other piece was an acquisition that Atkins had made in terms of part of Energy Solutions that was very US-based and very decommissioning, decontamination, decommissioning, waste management orientated. Now, the neat piece was that the SNC-Lavalin and the SNC-Lavalin group within the Canadian operations were also and have been working with Holtec for a long time around various elements of technology. Holtec, specialist company in terms of handling fuel and fuel in terms of the safe extraction and storage. So when we were able to complete on Atkins, look at the former Energy Solutions in the U.S., bring all of that together, that's really where we came together in terms of Holtec and ourselves forming CDI in the U.S., specifically around the decontamination and then the decommissioning piece. And, you know, we've been in the process of less than a year to put that together, and as you've seen, there's the whole Holtec as a company, and then the JV in turn has already secured some major long-term decommissioning work, and this is start to finish work. This is not, you know, a piece of services at the beginning. This is the full decommissioning of these facilities in the U.S. So, I mean, we're incredibly excited about that. It's the sector that we've got the you know, the best margins. It's the sector that we truly believe that we're completely differentiated in. And when we're pursuing these contracts, we're basically either sole sourced or we're one of two. So we're not in a big bid process. So we're incredibly excited about the potential within nuclear.
Assuming a pretty robust bidding pipeline as well.
Oh, absolutely. No, there is a huge amount. The thing about nuclear is, you know, it's or the nuclear sector is ultimately there's a lot of aging plants. I mean, whether they're being shut down and decommissioned for environmental reasons or whether they're being shut down and decommissioned because they're at the end of life. They're also fully funded in terms of the dowry schemes that they have, where they have to keep paying into them in order for the decommissioning to be fully funded. And these are, coming to market now, and clients are looking for opportunities to be able to get contractors like ourselves, who are capable of doing all of this, to actually then commit to doing that and moving on into the decommissioning program.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Maxim Sitchev from National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Maxim.
Just wanted to mention in terms of oil and gas, because you're talking about EBIT being flat year on year, but the first half is weaker relative just from a seasonality perspective. So what gives you the confidence that we're going to see a pretty significant lift in the back half for oil and gas?
Because we've won a number of contract awards and been really successful in terms of the, the picture in oil and gas, which I think you understand, is that, for a couple of years, there was a large portion of it being generated with the LNG projects in Australia in terms of completion of Gorgon and the completion of INPEX. And these were big projects where they were very visible within the backlog because they were projects start to finish. And there was a fair bit of scope growth on them, all done on a reimbursable or a unit rate type basis. I mean, at the same time, we've had the visibility of the completion of them, so we've been working really hard on business development across the Middle East and North America, but principally the Middle East. And we've got visibility of the pipeline there. We have been winning a lot of contracts in the Middle East. But it becomes less apparent in terms of the backlog because they are MSC call-off contracts where we are sort of ramping up there. So we do have visibility that really doesn't sit within the backlog numbers in terms of how we're going to ramp up and how we price these contracts. So that's the reason that we're confident that by the end of the year we'll end up in a place that is pretty much consistent with previous years.
Okay, that's very helpful. And then another question in terms of, as the business becoming more cost reimbursable, which, my understanding is less working capital intensive, when do you think see the shift where the drain that we've seen on non-capital is going to subside? Any visibility on that front, please?
Yeah, I think what we've seen in Q2 is a bit of a lot of timing, actually. There's two drivers, right? One is the thermal business as it completes has been using quite a bit of cash in the completion. So I think on a year-to-date basis, it's been consuming, about $75 million plus of working capital on its own. Then on the oil and gas side, I think we're dealing with two things, really. I mean, there are some settlements that did not materialize in the second quarter as we were hoping for. But we see those coming in Q3. So that also consumed. And then there were some milestone issues. So those were projects that are not in that reimbursable space, but more EPC type, which the milestone of some of the spend just didn't match, us hitting the customer milestone for getting paid. So I think you're right. As we wash through some of these more, I guess, challenging working capital situation in the Middle East, we should see a more normal rhythm. So that'll take a bit of a while. I mean, for stability, probably not this year. But like we said in prior calls, we do expect to get a positive OCF this year.
There's one other factor in terms of that sort of rebalancing shift away from – from a regional perspective is, you know, we're moving from a heavy IOC perspective in terms of the Australia piece to a NOC perspective in the Middle East. And whilst we don't have any concerns about payment, it is longer payment terms.
Right. And so I just want to clarify the positive OCF after working capital, right?
Yeah, including, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then trying to get sort of the sequencing right in terms of your approach to think about the 4-7 and the DPA and so forth, I mean, was it just the thought process to get the ball rolling on the, because correct me if I'm wrong, but originally the thought process was around, you know, the valued, you get the DPA, you get the legal overhang sort of sorted, you get the multiple, and then you can do kinds of other stuff. And what was the decision that made you change the mind in terms of pulling that process a bit more forward? So maybe if you don't mind just kind of explaining the thought process around that, please.
Yeah, I'm not sure we've necessarily pulled it forward. And certainly, you know, I think I saw something today about, you know the theoretical the possibility of us actually completing a transaction, which actually, as we said, is more likely to be Q4, at the time of a settlement. And basically, you know, we don't need, as I said before, we don't need, you know, the transaction with the 407 in order to fund a settlement, should that happen. And likewise, you know, the Canadian government or the prosecution service, I'm pretty sure, understands the value of the company and the value of our assets, and they're not going to sit there and look and determine something on the basis of what our cash balance is. So I'm not sure the two things are really, you know, from that perspective, they're not really related. I mean, what I alluded to, and in fact, I think, you know, you were looking for ideas in terms of how do you actually, you know, how do you get a market price really for the 407 to indicate that? We've always been working on the basis and working down the line of taking away all of the things that we feel are detractors to SNC-Lavalin's true or theoretical valuation. And we just believe that we're down to the last two. And we'd really like to get them completed and out the way, you know, as soon as possible, Q3, Q4 this year.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Our next question is from Mark Neville from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Sorry. Just first on the 407. Sorry, I just want to make sure I'm understanding. You said it was. Did you say sorry? It was a necessity, or I guess your choice to repay the full loan from the case, assuming there was a sale. I guess.
Yeah. The.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The loan agreement contains basically, because the loan is secured by the cash flow of the 407. So it was already included in the loan agreement that if we were to sell portions of the 407, there would be an amount that would have to be repaid on the loan. And it turns out because we refinance a portion already that we would have to basically pay the outstanding balance at this stage.
Okay, but I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, the dividends on the remaining portion would still more than cover the interest payments, and I guess I just thought that was sort of the agreement, but I guess you answered my question. And I guess maybe this answers the next one as well, but again, I guess I sort of understand the rationale for wanting to mark-to-market the asset and helping the value of the E&C business. I'm just curious as to the amount or the size that you decided to sell. Something this big, you know, I guess just based on our math, you know, it's probably netting north of $2 billion. It's sort of you repay the loan, but you know, your balance sheet, again, is sort of close to almost debt-free or net debt-free at that point, and you're suboptimal again. You're not really looking at doing M&A, at least it doesn't sound that way, through 18 or 19. So I'm just again, curious on the size. And, again, maybe having to repay the full case loan is partially the answer, too.
Well, I think on one hand, right, it, you know, we want to retain a strategic position. So that's why we don't go further, or we don't talk about an amount bigger than the 6.76%. So that's on one mm-hmm. side of it. I guess you could ask why we not.
Yeah, I was seeing less.
I think at this stage, when you look at the process and you start thinking, well, you kind of ask yourself a little bit, what's the point of selling less? If I mean, you're kind of still remaining strategic if you go all the way to 6.76%. Like we said, we have a few items we got to deal with, and there will be proceeds beyond that. But I think that's where I think it will allow us to basically make some nice strategic capital allocation decisions based on what happened to our stock price, and it gives us basically that flexibility, so which okay. is valuable, I think.
Okay. Maybe to dovetail on the working cap question, I believe last quarter and recent quarters, you were pointing to, I think, $100 million of debt repayments in 18. Is that still your expectation?
Well, I think it all gets mixed up now with this process we're going through on the 407. But
sure,
what
maybe
we will do is... Yeah.
Maybe if we're just thinking about the business. Yeah.
I'm sorry? You're breaking up.
Yeah,
we
were just thinking about the business. Yeah, no, again, I guess that guidance was given sort of before the potential sale. So, again, I was just sort of thinking about the actual business itself.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's still the objective,
yeah.
The underlying objective. You know, so if we don't say... You know, if we don't complete something until the end of Q4, for instance, we're looking to complete earlier than that. But if it was the end of Q4, then we're still on track for delivering the $100 million. I mean, that's our objective.
Okay. And then maybe just one last one on the Champlain. You mentioned some issues in the quarter. Just maybe if you can just provide some more color on that, if you could.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of well documented in the Montreal press, I think. It's mm-hmm. So it's a law change, a provincial law change, which in turn was objected to by part of the workforce who were then absent. So we lost a number of productive days. And ultimately, you know, we've talked to the client about that, and, you know, we think it's a clear... You know, it's a clear law change, a clear change, and we're working productively with the client around, you know, what's the solution to that. I mean, you know, do we keep going for the 21st of December? Do we accelerate further, or, you know, what do we do? But it's a good positive discussion, collaborative discussion with the customer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now take our next question from Michael Tupholm from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So Ben, you ran through some of your expectations for margins for some of the segments. I don't think you talked about mining. Just wondering how we should think about that segment. It looked a little bit low, the margin in mining in the quarter, relative to what we've historically seen. Just wondering about the back half of the year for that segment.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is low. I think one of the element in there is their they had some lower profitability contracts that they're working through at the moment, and you saw them being low in recent quarters as well. So that there's some awards that we're hoping to be able to announce in Q3, and those should start to restore some of the profitability that we used to see.
I mean, what we need as well is we need to really put a major project back in the mix there, and, you know, we are pretty optimistic in Q3 that we will land one of the contracts that we're in deep dialogue on. But I really think in terms of getting a stable, meaningful margin within that. In that sector at the moment, we need to get a large project in the mix.
And then with respect to oil and gas, I know you indicated you do expect the margins there to rebound. But I'm just wondering, was there anything going on in the quarter that led to the lower level of margins other than, I mean, I guess you mentioned that you've ramped down on some of the larger projects you'd been working on, but was there anything in particular happening in the quarter other than, you know, other than activity levels that would explain the level you did in Q2?
Yeah, so you're right. So there's the revenue aspects of it, which clearly drives it down. It makes it a little bit lumpy as well. And as I spoke about the cash flows and the, you know, some timing on settlements, that also had some impact on the EBIT generation. So there's a timing element to that.
That would be from an EBIT dollar perspective, I guess.
Yeah, but those settlements, you know, when you're near completion of projects and you get a settlement, you get a lot of margin for little revenue, basically.
Right.
So there's, yeah. So those are expected in Q3 and maybe some in Q4 as well.
Okay.
So there's.
And then with respect to some of the nuclear awards or the press releases you've been putting out recently on the decommissioning work, I know, Neil, you mentioned that you're still working through how you'll actually account for some of that work. But does that go into backlog in the near future, such as Q3, or is this – I know some of these projects don't start for some time, so how do we think about it from a backlog perspective?
Well, you should see the backlog going up in Q3 and Q4 as the contracts are fully developed. And once we've got the information on the total CapEx piece, then they will end up in ultimately they'll end up in the backlog.
I mean, we're still, as Neil said, we're still working through the accounting of that. So it is likely that this will be equity pickup. And it's unclear still to us how you deal with RPOs or backlog under the new rules, whether you can kind of count that. But if we're not able to report in backlog, we'll figure out a way to give you some indication of the size of business that we're going to be performing and the related revenues coming down to that. So, but it is likely ultimately in the P&L to be an equity pickup.
And then just lastly, with respect to EDPM, a very strong level of bookings that you disclosed in the quarter, and I know that segment has there's a lot of varied activity going on within it, but can you just speak to whether or not much of the bookings related to infrastructure work and particularly in the U.S.?
There was some, but the vast majority of the bookings were, or the major pieces of the bookings were actually in the UK. I mean, there was a couple of projects that I mentioned that were US related, but the shape of the, the shape of the former Atkins business, now EDPM, is pretty consistent. Over the last 12 months, so in terms of the revenues by region and the bookings by region are still very consistent. So the EDPM business is a large chunk of that is UK is UK based and the bookings were UK.
Got it. That's helpful. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Jean-François Lavoie from Desjardins Capital Market. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Good morning, gentlemen. I was wondering if you could discuss a little bit about on the cost synergies development that you had with the integration of Atkins, please.
Yeah. So, as we said, I think last year we delivered 32 against 30, and the cost synergies are working and being delivered sort of really well in the first half. And basically, we're just over the 120 million in terms of identified and either completed or within execution within a plan. So the 120 is no issue. We'll probably end the year slightly above that.
Okay, great.
So
thank you very much.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, we had said that we would deliver 90 in the P&L for 2018, and we're also well on track for that.
Great, thank you very much. And I was wondering if you could discuss the pipeline of opportunity in infrastructure, especially in Canada, with all the big projects are coming up, please.
Yeah, I mean the pipeline continues to be really good. I mean we were disappointed that we're not selected for the Gordie Howe project, but there's a number of other projects that we are continuing to work on. I mean the next one really in terms of progression and submission is the Trillium Line in Ottawa. That one clearly, we have not knowledge and capabilities in terms of rail and transit, the location. The Trillium Line runs north to south below the Confederation Line that we are in the process of finishing off. It's a diesel line rather than an electric line, but We've got a lot of knowledge. We've got a team that is coming off of phase one of the Ottawa Confederation Line, and you know we are pretty hopeful that we can be successful on that. But there's a number of other projects that are coming to market, and so we see the we've seen a little bit of a gap in terms of the bid pipeline process, but that's ramping back up again, and we think there's a great opportunity to continue to grow Canadian infrastructure. The infrastructure group as well, I mean, not just Canada. I mean, we have also been spending a fair bit of time positioning ourselves in the U.S. market, both over in the East Coast and over in the West Coast of the States. And that was really another sort of revenue synergy opportunity by bringing together sort of Ian Edwards infrastructure capabilities, Canadian capabilities, the O&M together with the full execution with the former Atkins engineering capabilities in the U.S. So we also see not quite to the same level, but we do see opportunities now, real opportunities for us to be successful within the rail and transit market and infrastructure market within the U.S.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that caller, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Our next and final question comes from Devin Dodge from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
All right, thank you, and good afternoon, guys. Just to get started on the clean energy segment here, can you provide an update on the opportunity that you see with ABB? I believe you were looking to finalize the terms of this JV sometime around mid-year. I guess just wondering what you see in terms of opportunities and how significant could this be for SNC?
Yeah, so that's the JV basically where ABB have the technology, they've got the products. The ideal opportunity of us coming together is that we then take care of the project management and the execution. That JV is still on track, and in fact, we're sort of really aiming for that to be finalized and launched, at least phase one of that JV in September of this year, with the second phase. So we're doing it region by region, with the second phase of it being launched towards the end of the year. And I think we said before, there's a significant piece of backlog weight or is there that will come into the JV ready to execute. So I mean, from our perspective, in terms of it's really good inexpensive BD to begin with. But then I think it's a great opportunity, really, for, you know, two companies with very different skills and capabilities to be able to come together and execute in a really great way. But the market is, I think if you know, everything comes to expectations by the end of the year, that, you know, that could easily be a, you know, $1 billion Canadian dollar backlog business.
Okay, that's helpful. Then maybe switching to the nuclear division, lots of good contracts awards recently. Many of these seem to be incremental to, like, the run rate of that business. Just wondering, how challenging is it to ramp up this for these activities? Just wondering, is it difficult to find the labor resources to complete this type of work?
Yeah, I think the in terms of if we were looking at just do we have all of the specialist capabilities in terms of the field execution of the work, I don't see an issue with that. But in terms of the absolute specialist expertise, the engineering, that would be challenging if we were looking to do that, you know, purely from an internal current capability. So we will be going to market to look at how we can attract the skills and the additional skills and capabilities into the organization. But I think the reason we're so confident is because basically the skills and capability will go where the interesting projects are. And, you know, we believe that we've got the best, the best interesting projects. So we're confident that in terms of attracting in the additional specialist resource that we need, that, we'll be successful with all of that.
Okay. And then maybe one last one. In the capital division, can you provide an update on the commitment to invest in the Carlisle Infrastructure Fund in terms of when you think capital would be deployed and what type of opportunities look most interesting currently for that fund?
Well, I think we're still committed to that investment and that initiative. We're looking at, it's been moving in time a little bit. I think the team has been very active at looking at opportunities. So we're still looking at something this year in that space, but it won't be the entire commitment. We're still very excited about that program. I think the partnership with Carlisle, and as we look at some of the opportunities that we've been looking at together, we still believe this is a good opportunity for us. So hopefully something gets funded this year, but it won't be the entire amount for sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
It appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Jasmin, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Great. Thank you all for having joined us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.